Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Jones Chronicles. I'm your host, Christina. I hope every woman who deserves to be applauded for her parenting, whether it was now or before or generations before, who can say they were a good mother, a wonderful Mother's Day. I spent the week getting to many rabbit holes involving the homeless and the dregs, which is a fascinating channel in regards to San Francisco. But I also learned quite a few historical stories that I would like to share with you. Pearl Harbor was shallow. The actual harbor itself. And on December 7th, a date I think is very memorable in history, 1941, West Virginia was moored outboard of USS Tennessee at Ford Island, in 40 feet of water. As the Japanese attack began, West Virginia, her port side laid bare, became an easy target for enemy torpedoes. Those torpedoes ripped into the hull below the waterline and bombs fell from enemy warcraft, causing the sections of the superstructure to collapse. As fires broke out, the ship's damage control parties fruitlessly attempted to extinguish them, but unfortunately, the order was given to abandon ship. In the aftermath of Pearl Harbor, it was discovered by the military that the sailors, the still alive sailors, were trapped in the sunken USS West Virginia vessel. Realizing there was nothing they could do to secure the rescue of the survivors, they told their families that they died during the attack.
That's fucked up.
Me personally, I feel as if you really can't rescue someone or my loved one, just let that be the answer. I'd rather the truth than a lie. Oh, they died in the attack. Well, they may have died in the attack, but they also may not have died in the attack and they were one of the people that you knew were alive. Just say, hey, this was the schematics of why we couldn't, which makes me feel as if there was an opportunity to actually rescue them. And I think that an attempt to be made should be made. And it feels as if they didn't even go that far. They're just like, oh, well, that seems like a lot. We'll leave it to it. Here's the crazy part. Months later, when they finally got inside of the vessel, they found three men who'd found an airlock that survived for 16 days. That's how you know you fucked up. So had they made any attempt or effort, they may have saved these men. Additionally, it said no one wanted to guard the USS West Virginia because they could hear the banging of those trapped inside. They could have at least offered them a dignified death with their loved ones being able possibly to communicate with them. I just feel this piece of history was definitely shameful in the face of an already horrible attack. But these sailors didn't die at the hands of the Japanese. They were abandoned by their own military. Another bit of historic, and there are historians that are trying to debate it, but for the most part, there is evidence to actually support that the word thug traces its roots not from the hip hop community or the African community, but to the Hindu and Urdu word thug, which means thief or swindler, and which itself is derived from the Sanskrit verb that I'm going to screw up completely, stagati, to conceal. The word would enter the English language in the 1800s during the British imperial rule of India, which leads to the Thuggee cult. The Thuggees were believed to be a professional organization of criminals and assassins who repeatedly had strangled thousands of people on India's roadsides. What made them a cult was the fact that they were widely portrayed as born criminals who worship Kali, the Hindu goddess of death and destruction. So that's what separates them from, say, the mafia. Nearly 4,000 thugs were discovered, and of those, about 2,000 were convicted. The remaining were either sentenced to death or transported within the next 6 years. Sleeman then declared the Thuggee to be completely eradicated. Mark Twain wrote extensively about the Thuggees in two chapters of his classic 1897 travelogue, Following the Equator. The Thuggees were actually bound by a set of rules, such as the prohibition to steal a person's property without killing them in accordance with ritual first. Gee, thanks. Brahmins were not killed because of their purity. Killing of the sick was considered an unworthy sacrifice. And women were not killed because they were considered to be incarnations of Kali. So at least we don't have sexual assault to worry about under thugs. Membership of the fraternity of Thuggees was often through hereditary lines passed down from father to son. Others trained with guru, similar to an apprenticeship, or tried to align themselves with other thugs in the hope of being recruited. Sometimes the children of travelers who had been killed were then groomed to become thugs themselves, as the presence of children would help allay suspicion. This very much feels like the thugs of many organizations today have stolen some of those tactics. Burham, the Indian thug, holds the record as the most prolific murderer, something to go ahead and check off the whole bucket list. As the leader of a thuggy cult in Uda district, modern day Uttar Pradesh in India, as his trial and it was established that between 1790 and 1840, he had strangled at least 913 victims.
Jesus Christ!
After his arrest in 1840, Burram and his family were executed in Jabalpur. The Thuggee assassins were eventually suppressed by the British rulers of India in the 1830s. After the implementation of the Thuggee and Decacity? Suppression Acts, which stated, quote, it is hereby enacted that whoever shall be proved to have belonged either before or after the passing of this act to any gang of thugs, either within or without territories of the East India Company, shall be punished with imprisonment for life with hard labor, end quote. I wonder if Tupac knew that when he put thug life on his chest. Speaking of another deceased person for reasons that are no way near similar, let's talk about extreme polyphagia. It's a very rare condition in which the person suffering is unable to control their appetite, in some cases will literally eat anything. One of the most famous historical cases, and certainly one of the most disturbing, is that of French soldier and sideshow performer Turner, who lived from approximately 1772 to 1798, who is often portrayed in a very famous portrait as consuming a child. I think that portrait and that accusation are both taken out of context, if my memory serves me correctly. Pereire was born near Lyon around 7072 and displayed an abnormally voracious appetite from birth. By his teens, his parents could no longer afford to feed him, so he was tossed out. Actually, at a very earlier age, I believe he was tossed out into the streets where he was taken on and traveled with various prostitutes or people of ill repute. He needed to consume at least his own body weight in meat every day. And because of that, he had to get to desperate means to fulfill that caloric intake. So he was forced to survive the best he could. He took to begging, to stealing, to becoming a sideshow attraction by performing and swallowing feats on the streets of Paris, or eating stones, corks, whole baskets full of apples, and even live animals.
Hey, that's too much. Now you stepped over the line. Now we won't be talking that kind of shit.
When war broke out in 1792, Terreur joined the French Revolutionary Army, but collapsed with exhaustion when military rations failed to satisfy his extreme hunger. Even being granted quadruple rations was not enough to stop him scavenging for scraps in bins and gutters. He even fed on poultices stolen from the apothecary. Am I saying that right? Apothecary? Baffled, senior military surgeons detained him to investigate his eating habits and fed him meats intended for 15 or more laborers, as well as live cats, snakes, lizards, and puppies, not puppies. Before deciding that his digestive system should be put to military use, smuggling documents swallowed in wooden boxes and retrieved after passing through his gut.
This is not okay.
This is the type of shit and the type of life people live where I'm like, what was the plan here? If you are a puppet master executing their will, and every will has a purpose and every purpose. Yeah. What was the purpose of this person's life? And there was another guy that we covered, a guy with the he had the condition where he was growing too much. It's like, what kind of, it is a life, but man, what a life. A life of no fulfillment. His very first assignment, which unknown to him, contained only a dummy message as a test mission, led to his capture and torture by Prussians, culminating in a mock execution followed by yet more brutal beatings before being dumped behind French lines. Terreur returned to the military hospital and begged for the chief surgeon, Baron Percy, to do anything in his power to cure him. Everything failed. Laudanum, wine vinegar, tobacco pills, and numerous controlled diets were unable to stop him from escaping to scavenge for offal outside butcher shops or fight for carrion on rubbish heaps. He was even caught trying to eat corpses in the hospital mortuary. Despite calls from many quarters for him to be sent to a lunatic asylum, Percy insisted on continuing his experiments, but when a toddler disappeared from the hospital, suspicion fell on Terreur, and he was driven out. 4 years later, Percy was summoned by a surgeon of the Versailles Hospital to find Terreur dying from tuberculosis, which he did a month later at the age of 26. What an existence to have. I can't imagine the endless suffering of this individual. And historically, his suffering won't be recalled as that, but of the guy that may have eaten a baby. Our last subject is on the unspeakable things that people do to children. Our last subject we'll speak on is the unspeakable acts in which we destroy children in this world. or how certain adults destroy children, supported by sometimes those children's parents. And Hamilton Byrne was a yoga teacher with a penchant for plastic surgery. To others, she was the evil leader of the family, an apocalyptic cult with about 500 followers and more than 28 children. Some were the children of cult members. Other were newborns that came from unwed mothers tricked into thinking their babies were going to good homes. And a few were out and out stolen.
Don't touch the child!
Some of those children are speaking out about how Hamilton Burns' attempts to build a perfect race through a collection of children, some of whom were forced to have their hair bleached blonde, were homeschooled on an isolated property and were injected with LSD as part of an initiation ritual. From her base in a quiet suburb, she recruited wealthy professionals to join her cult, including doctors, lawyers, nurses, architects, and scientists. So people that we think or we look to not be bought into these ideas. I think it's something Mimi was talking about, like how could, but it just depends. Just depends on where you are in your life. By the 1980s, police estimated that her fortune was that of $50 million. They had the children to wear, quote, very royal, Von Trapp characters in the Sound of Music sort of clothes. Your velvets, your smart shoes, everything had to be polished and looking the same. And that was really important, or that was really to implant in us that we're all brothers and sisters, end quote. The family taught an eclectic mixture of Christianity and Hinduism with other Eastern and Western religions on the principle that spiritual truths are universal. Children raised in the group studied the major scriptures of these religions as well as the works of gurus, including Sri Chinmoy, Mather Baba, and Rajneesh. One adopted daughter, Sarah Hamilton, later described the group's beliefs as, quote, hodgepodge of Christian and Eastern mysticism. The basis of the family's philosophy was that their founder, Anne Hamilton Byrne, was the reincarnation of Jesus and a living God.
Bullshit!
Within the group, Jesus, Buddha, and Krishna were regarded as enlightened beings who came down to earth to aid humanity, with Hamilton Byrne being put in the same category as these teachers. On the basis of this belief, members of her inner circle claimed to be reincarnations of the original 12 apostles. The harsh treatment when those would naturally rebel was carried out by some of the women known as the aunties, loyal cult members who lived with and taught the children. The children believed that they were brothers and sisters and thought Anne and Bill Hamilton Byrne, yes, she was married, were their parents until they were rescued by police and the cult was broken up. How did that occur? Well, in 1987, Hamilton Byrne expelled Sarah from the group because of arguing and rebellious behavior. Oh no. With the support of a private investigator and others, she then played an instrumental role in bringing the family to the attention of the Victoria Police. As a result of her efforts, a raid took place at Kai Lama on August 14th of 1987, and all children were removed from the premises. Sarah later went on to study medicine and became a qualified doctor. She learned about her abduction and eventually met her biological mother. There goes my hero. Watch him as he goes. After the raid, Anne and her husband William left Australia for a period of 6 years. Operation Forest and An investigation involving police in Australia, the UK, and US resulted in their arrest in June of 1993 by the FBI in New York, because remember, she had money. This followed admissions by former members of the family, including the group's solicitor, Peter Kibbe, and the group had engaged in adoption scams, including acts of forgery. Anne and her husband were extradited to Australia and charged with a conspiracy to defraud and commit perjury by falsely registering the births of three unrelated children as their own triplets, charges that were later dropped. Elizabeth Whitaker, the wife of Howard Whitaker, was their co-defendant. Anne and her husband pleaded guilty to the remaining charge of making a false declaration and were fined $5,000 each. The conspiracy charges against Whitaker were dropped and she was convicted of falsely obtaining nearly $23,000 between 1983 and 1987. Other members of the family were also tried at court. Margot McKellen, age 64, was convicted of falsely obtaining $28,000 between 1978 and 1988. This is money, by the way. I don't know if I needed to clarify that. Joy Traveling, age 56, was convicted of falsely obtaining over $38,000 between 1979 and 1988. And Helen Buchanan, age 49, was convicted of falsely obtaining almost $15,000 between 1980 and 1987. We can all guess at how light those sentences were.
I am disgusted.
And that is going to wrap up our podcast this week. If you have any ideas, suggestions, topics you would like to hear discuss, blackercouch@gmail.com. You can leave a comment below. My social media will be there as well. Like, share, subscribe. Until the next time, peace, hair grease, and blacker magic.